Okay, let's get started. So by my count, we are up to the third parak of Pirkei Avos, therefore last week we did a shiur. 2 weeks ago we did an opening shiur. This past Shabbos we did a shiur instead of on Wednesday, and now we're up to the third parak. And I think this is the third year in a row that we've done some form of a Pirkei Avos shiur, because I have in my files two previous Pirkei Avos shiurim on Parak Gimel, but happy to find a new Mishnah, which we've never studied together, and it really is a profound Mishnah, not the typical topic we would think of for Pirkei Avos, in the sense that we usually think of Pirkei Avos as more, ethics and Musar and Beram L'Chavero, and this is actually dipping its toe, if you will, into a very significant, theological topic, and if that sounds too abstract or highfalutin, I think it's much more, visceral, and even in the kishkas, of what does it mean to be a Jew? And what does it mean to have a relationship which we assume, even if we don't fully understand, is special with Hashem and different? What does that mean to us, and what does that mean in terms of how Hashem looks at the non-Jewish world? How are we supposed to look at the non-Jewish world? So this is like a huge topic, and there are sources that are way beyond Pirkei Avos, but there is actually a Mishnah that addresses that, and for the most part, we'll limit ourselves to the commentaries on Pirkei Avos. And I think that, while it's not going to be an exhaustive shiur on such a huge topic, you could literally write a book on such a topic, but I think it will give us a number of different kivunim and different approaches, again, at least as they relate to the issues that are mentioned in the Mishnah itself. So the Mishnah is towards the end of Parak Gimel. It's in Parak Gimel Mishnah Yudalit, and it's source number one on your sheet. Come on in, there are source sheets on the table, if you could give, please. So it says, Hu Haya Omer. Again, if you study Pirkei Avos, you're familiar with the fact that a lot of Mishnayos are, in multiples. So you have Rabbi X said this, and then the next Mishnah, Hu Haya Omer. This is a very common style in Pirkei Avos. So if you take a look at Parak Gimel, Mishnah Yud Gimel, you will see that the who here is Rabbi Akiva, none less than maybe the most famous of all the Tanaim, Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so Rabbi Akiva said the following. Chaviv Adam Shenivra Betzelem. Right? How do you want to translate Adam? Man, capital M, man and woman, but capital M, man is beloved. How do I know that man is beloved? Because he, she is created in the image of God. Chiba Yisera no da aslo, and not just Chaviv, beloved, but there's an extra dose of love. No da aslo. Now, I'm going to hedge for a moment on totally translating this, because exactly how to translate this phrase is a fascinating machloket that we'll get to as the shiur continues. I can't completely avoid it, or else it'll be unintelligible at the moment. But there's some extra love that is communicated to mankind. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, B'tzelem Elokim asa esa Adam. And we are going to see a pattern of this in the next two sections of the Mishnah as well, which is that there is the fact. And that is itself valuable. And then there's a bonus, there's extra. Chiba Yisera, by the fact that there's not just a fact, but it's actually written somewhere. It's written in the Torah. Now, what does that mean, and why is that extra? You'll have to just take my word for it that we're going to get to it, and I think you're going to find it a fascinating machloket. But I'm calling that all point number one, which is there is a basic idea that Adam, which we are translating, you are translating, I'm just agreeing with you, is mankind, is beloved, as evidenced by the fact that mankind is created in the image of God, and there's some extra love that is communicated in the fact that that's not just a fact, but it's actually written in the Torah. As the pasuk says to Noach, B'tzelem Elokim asa et Adam, right? Hashem created mankind in his image. Point number two, Chaviv in Yisrael, Shenikru'u Banim Lamakom. Beloved are the Jewish people who are considered the children of Hashem. So first of all, in case we weren't sure, and I didn't press you on it, but this is not only important in its own right, but this presumably implies a translation of the first phrase. Right? If the second phrase is clearly talking exclusively to the Jewish people, Chaviv in Yisrael, so who was the first phrase, Chaviv Adam? Who was that? Everybody. Right? Not, I don't think it precludes the Jewish people, but it's not limited to the Jewish people. Right? One might have, again, if you are a real, particularist and everything is yidden, 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 you might have even read the Adam as, of course, we're Adam, who else could be Adam? I'm not saying you would have been right, but I could have imagined someone reading it that way. But presumably you'd realize your mistake when you get to the second line. Because the second line introduces something that's obviously particular and specific to the Jewish people. So we'll have to get back to again what this hierarchy is, but it's not like all or nothing, right? There's a special love that Hashem has for all mankind. That was the first line. The second line is that there's an additional, even more special love, a greater love that Hashem has for the Jewish people because we are considered His children. And just like we saw in the first clause of the Mishnah, there's the it, there's the fact, and then there's the chiba yisera, some extra dose of love by the dint of the fact that no da'as lehem, shenikru uban lemakom. This wasn't a secret, but it's actually communicated, as it says in the Torah, and there's actually many psukim in the Torah that refer to us as children. But here's one example, banim atem l'Hashem elokeichem. The Jewish people are considered Hashem's children. So there's chaviv adam, level one, and then there is chavivim Yisrael, that we are banim l'makom, and that is level two. Come on in, please, how are you? Welcome. Okay, number three is still with the Jewish people, and number three is, come on in, Mr. Simons, chavivim Yisrael shenitin lehem kli chemda. So it's interesting that level two and level three are both the same words, chaviv in Yisrael. But whereas the first one is just something about us, right? Hashem's child, right? You love your children just because, right? It doesn't necessarily imply anything else other than the very existence of the children. They're banim. In number three, we're still on the same topic. We haven't progressed to a different topic. We're still the Jewish people and that they're very beloved to Hashem. And how do we know that? Shenitan lehem kli chemda. Because Hashem gave them His very special and beloved a kli or utensil. And what is that? Chiba yisera no da'at lehem. Shenitin lehem kli chemda shebo nivra ha'olam shenemar ki lakatov nsatzim torasiel tazavu. Obviously the reference here is to the Torah. The very fact that Hashem gave us the Torah is a sign of this very special love that He has for us. And what makes, now you'll say, you know, sometimes you give someone a present, you know, I think I've probably brought this up as an example in various shiurim, that, you know, my grandmother, for like multiple Hanukkahs in a row, gave me a wallet. Like the same one. Now it happens to be, I have a 20-something year old wallet. My whole family is like humiliated that I still use it. But first of all, it works, okay? I'm not going to get into the whole like men's wallet thing. I know it's not nearly as big a thing as the woman's purse thing, but we got a thing too. And, you know, some wallets have this kind of pocket and that kind of pocket. And I found one that works for me. And my grandmother gave it to me and she passed away a long time. So I still have this wallet. But I have one, you know, it's like every Hanukkah is the same gift. And I have an aunt, her daughter, every Hanukkah another scarf. And another scarf. And my brother-in-law, where do you keep Barbara's scarves? The aunt's scarf. Like, you know, you just like, he says, thank you, right? So sometimes you get a gift and it's like, you know, does that really, you know, show, like, do they really put any thought to it? But if someone gives you a very special gift, something that they know you love, or that it's like, you know, the newest whatever, or the most expensive whatever, right? Sometimes a gift really does convey something very special. So that's really what the Mishnah is trying to say here, which is that it's not just Hashem gave us a gift. Sometimes a gift can be, you know, very, you know, off the factory line and like not much thought to it. But this is not anything. This is the Kli Chemda of Hashem, His most precious thing He gave to us. And how do we know the Torah is so precious? You'll have to see exactly what this means. Or maybe we'll never really understand it, but we'll try to at least understand it, because the Mishnah itself tells us that through the Torah, bo nivra ha'olam, so to speak, the world was created through the Torah. Okay, so this is the Mishnah. As I said at the outset, for those who walked in a few minutes late, this is a fascinating Mishnah in Perek Gimel, because it's not, you know, the typical Pirkei Avos fare, which we usually think of as more aphorisms and good advice and midos and derech eretz, which is all wonderful and important. Here we have, as you can see, in the sum total of this Mishnah, certainly in the first two clauses of the Mishnah, our Mishnah, so to speak, has waded into, you know, one of the most, you know, over the centuries, you could say one of the most sensitive theological issues. And even now, I don't know if it's as sensitive as it might have been in the Middle Ages or other times, but, you know, as you know, you know, and we don't feel it living in Israel, I guess, but certainly for Jews living anywhere in the diaspora, right, there is, you know, in many ways, no more sensitive third rail issue than, you know, are the Jews a chosen people? Are they not? Do they think they're better than us? All of those things. How does Hashem view the Jewish people? How does He view non-Jews? How should we view non-Jews? Like, this is like as a major, major theological topic. Boom, right here in the middle of a Mishnah in Perkei Avos. So before we get into going through step by step this Mishnah and addressing that specific issue of what is, how does Hashem view mankind, how does Hashem view non-Jews, how does Hashem view us as Jewish people, before we get into that, which we'll get to in momentarily, I saw, like, right before I was ready to make the source sheet, I thought I had done all the research, and then I came across one final source. And this, anyone who's ever prepared or done, like, often it's that one last, you know, let me look at one more book, let me look, open up one more sefer, and like, oh, wow. Oh, Baruch Hashem, I saw, because this is a treasure. So all of a sudden, I stumbled on source number two, the Merkevas HaMishnah. The Merkevas HaMishnah is not so well known, but it was by a great Sephardi Chacham, whose father was Moshe Alshakar, from the Alshakar family, very, very famous rabbinic family. And I think they were in Spain originally, if I remember correctly. Anyway, but like, yeah, they were in Spain, and basically they were living at a stage of Jewish history. You know, the Christians and the Muslims take turns trying to kill us. So that was, you know, right now we're at a time where Christians are our friends and Muslims are not, but it's been reversed at other points in history. So that was a time where, if I remember correctly, I think the Christians were bad. So he was living in different parts of Spain, and each time the Christians would take over, so they'd be persecuted the Jews, so he'd run away and run away, and eventually I think he went to Algeria, and then eventually the Al-Shakar family, he died in Algeria. So just to give you a sense, a little bit of Jewish history of who this is. But he says something amazing. The opening Mishnah of the third parak, now we're in the 14th Mishnah of the third parak, the opening Mishnah of the third parak is famous to everybody. First of all, because we learned it together, I think a year ago. Obviously you remember that. But second of all, and more seriously, because it's just a famous Mishnah, and because Achmanu Litzlan, whenever you go to a funeral, certainly at Eretz Chaim, before they actually move to the burial, the person who's running it from the Chevra Kadisha says this out loud. And that is the famous mission at the opening parak of Akavya ben Mahalel Omer. Right? If you just think of three things, you'll never come to sin. And what are those? The fact that all of us come from very crude, basic biological material. Initially, we all come from the dip of semen and the egg, right? Very, very simple, crude material. On the other hand, we're all going to be worm food. And I'm not like being glib. That's the, almost literally translation of the Mishnah. We're all going to be Rima Vatolea. And number three is, at some point in that process, we're going to have to give a din v'cheshbon to Hashem for our actions. Now, not exactly the, you know, hey, let's get up and have a great day, you know, thing you'd be thinking about. But if you kept that in your mind all day, you'd probably be depressed, but you'd probably also never sin. Who would sin if they thought about that all the time? That's what Akavya ben Mahalel says. Okay? We, again, it's on the internet. You can find a recording, a whole shir on that, every stage of that thing. That's the beginning of the parak. Now we're almost at the end of the parak, and says the Merkevas HaMishnah number two, you know why Rabbi Akiva brought these three things? Because he had a kavya. Again, it's pretty funny. He doesn't make this point, but there's a kavya and a kiva, not the same person. A kiva, if you will, is coming to be the mirror and the balance of Akavya. What's the difference? Look where it's underlined. It's beautiful. I thought this was so stunning, this interpretation. Bazeh Hashalem Rabbi Akiva, Hishalem Rabbi Akiva v'amar, im heyot shedivrei Akavya, heim amitiim. It's true that what Akavya said is absolutely downright 100% true. Great advice. If you keep on remembering that you're really a nothing, and you're going to be a nothing, and everyone's going to judge you, you know, what would be the point of running after this lust or that pleasure when you know it's so finite and fleeting, and in a minute you're going to be in the grave, and from, you know, for eternity you're going to be judged? You know, wouldn't you take the long-term investment? Of course you would. It's all true. And nevertheless, asher heim siba laharchik min haveva. Right, Akavya ben Mahalel is not trying to inspire anyone to greatness. He's scaring you from sinning. Right? Im kolze, tzarcha adam shiasim magamat panav l'shlosh aninim hanechbadim asher ba'avuram yishtadel ha'adam ba'asiyas ha'tov. So said Rabbi Akiva, exactly the point I made somewhat humorously a minute ago, and I know we absolutely actually discussed in depth when I gave that shir a year or two ago, which is that everything about Akavya ben Mahalel is negative, scary, and depressing. Now the musr is that sometimes in life we have to think of hard truths. Life is not all one big, you know, Shlomo Katz concert, or, you know, it's not all Yishai Ribo and fun and whatever. There are like real hard truths in life, and, you know, it's important to be a balanced person and know those. So on that very point comes along, according to the Merkevas HaMishnah, Rabbi Akiva at the end of the parak and says, it's good, you have one card in your pocket called a kavya. Remember these harsh truths, and that will inspire you to not do bad things. But life, and this is an important lesson, again, it was worth coming just for this. Life is not about just not sinning. There are people, and if you'll indulge me on my soapbox for half a second, There are schools, there are teachers, there are rabbanim, whose entire educational philosophy is as if the world is one big, you know, obstacle course, or it's like Donkey Kong, or I don't know, what, Pac-Man, or one of those games when we were kids. The whole goal is just don't, like, trip over the bomb. Just don't sin. Now, there is a truth. There's a truth in that. There's value in realizing that there are scary things in the world. Scary things for our physical health. We're worried about our kids doing stupid things all the time. And we do stupid things all the time, to some extent. And we want to, you know, try to, you know, I got teenagers who drive, right? Every time, you know, you're like, if you remember, if you're too tired, pull over, call me when you get there, all that kind of stuff, right? Because God forbid, chas v'shalom, about that or a million other things, bad things can happen. So we're always trying to remind ourselves, and hopefully remind our children, you know, to do the right thing, to be smart, etc., etc., etc. But life is not all about just not messing up, and just not falling, and just not sinning. Says Rabbi Akiva, no less than, it's not about just avoiding problems. We want to have actually a happy, fulfilling, meaningful life. And that, yes, involves avoiding bad stuff. But it also means you have to do good stuff. Right? It's like, imagine you have that person, right? Often this happens in a family. I'm being stereotypical because this is what happened with my in-laws, but it could happen, I think it often does happen this way, but it could obviously be the opposite, where at some point, you know, the husband gets either high cholesterol or had a heart attack or had a something, and now the doctors say you have to change your diet. And the rest of life is, you know, how little taste can we put in the food? Right? And it never works if you go to that extreme, because who wants to live that way? So there's this constant tension of, but like, I don't know, we have to give me something that I like. Like, if you have, right, the only way you'll get a person to take that kind of diet is every now, is there has to be some regularity of actually things that you enjoy. It can't just be the bland tofu. Okay, I'm revealing too much. Anyway, this is what happens to my mother-in-law and my wife when they don't come to the shir. Okay, now you can tell them, right? They're not there to defend. Anyway, it was all out of love. It was all out of love. My father-in-law had two heart attacks, you know, like by the time he was 50. So, anyway. But in the spiritual diet, that's exactly, says the Merkavah Mishnah, what Rabbi Akiva is coming to say. Don't just look at life as there's a bunch of obstacles that I have to avoid. That's true. You do want to avoid them. But life is really about doing good things and meaningful things and enjoyable spiritual things. And he shows, basically, and we won't read everything inside, but he basically shows how the three things in our Mishnah parallel, in a more positive, uplifting, and inspiring way, the three things in Akavya. So if you take a look, for example, at 4 or 5 lines down, he says each one of these things are Gimel Keneged Gimel. What is that? So the first one was, as I mentioned to you, the Kavya says, remember, you're a nothing. You're a nothing. Why should you have any ego in this world? You come from just crude, simple drops of biological material. So says Akiva in our Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva, or you could look at it as, I was born and I'm created with Tzelem Elohim. I'm in the image of God. Ich bin Chushever. I'm not just a nothing from a drop of semen. I'm Tzelem Elohim. It's all about who are you, how are you created, but that's a much more uplifting and an empowering message. Number two, at the end of the line, when Akavya ben Mahalel says you're going to be worm food, you're going to die, so that parallels, says the Merkava Mishnah, this is a little bit more of a reach, but he says that parallels when our Mishnah says you are banim lamakom. If you're a child, says the Merkava Mishnah, you all have genetic and biological similarities to your parent. So it's not just you have mommy's nose and daddy's eyes, says the Merkava's Mishnah. Just like Hashem is eternal. Since we're banim lamakom, there's an element of eternality in us as well. It's true that temporarily, when we die, our bodies decompose biologically. But we believe in Tchias HaMesim. And then our tzaddik will be reborn. So there is a certain level of eternality to us as well. That's banim l'Hashem. Don't think that this... Again, it's a scary thing, it's a depressing thing to think about, you know, from dust to dust. But that's actually only temporary. We actually have this quality in us, like Hashem, to be eternal. And last but not least, towards the end, he says, when Akavya says, remember, one day you're going to get called to the principal's office, and the cameras have seen everything, you can't hide anything from the principal. Right? One day after 120, Hashem's going to call you to the big bechina in the sky. That's scary. On the flip side, what did Rabbi Akiva say in our Mishnah? How beloved are you that Hashem gave you the Torah? That is to say, you don't have to be scared of the big bechina in the sky, because the Torah is going to be there for you. Look at, you're going to be able to pull out all the mitzvahs that you did. I've discussed this in other contexts. I think I actually gave this in a pre-Shavuot shir here. I definitely mentioned this to men in a shir. But the Ramban says that the reason we say the brachos on Torah every morning, Asher b'char banu mikol ha'amim v'nasmanas v'torazo, because we're thanking Hashem, because Hashem gave us the cheat code. Hashem gave us the answers before the test. Now we still have to be smart enough to study the answers and do well on the test. That's b'cher chavshit. But it's not like we have to guess what Hashem wants from us. Hashem gave us the answers. So the Torah is a gift. So that's why the third thing in our mission is, you don't have to be scared of the test because Hashem gave you the answers in advance. Now, of course, we know that sometimes you give the kid, the teacher can go over all the questions and say, if you study this, you'll do well. But you still need to spend, 5 hours on Motzei Shabbos, studying because the test is on Sunday. And the kid rather play basketball or play on his phone. Okay, so en chanami, just because he gave us the Torah doesn't mean that we're going to get 100 on the test. But we have a very good chance of doing well on the test because Hashem gave us the answers. He gave us the cheat code. He gave us the Torah. So before we get into what we're going to spend most of the shiur now discussing, which is the whole topic of the mission itself, Jews versus non-Jews, I thought this was so beautiful, I couldn't start the shiur with anything other than that, which is that this Mishnah also has an additional benefit and purpose, which is that it parallels the Akavia Mishnah, which is probably more famous, but also more depressing. And again, I want to be clear, one without the other is a problem. Right? No one will be successful without both, right? You need love and discipline as a parent. It can't just be everything's good, good, good. Sometimes you have to say no, but if everything is no, 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 also not good parenting or good teaching. So it's the same thing in life. Now you have these two Mishnahs in a very beautiful way that make that profound point, and in a more specific way, says the Merkavah's Mishnah, they mirror each other one by one. Okay, now let's jump into the second part of the Shir, which is the actual content of the Mishnah, or the topic of Hashem's special relationship with the Jewish people. And in the first point of the Mishnah, Chaviv Adam Shenivar B'Tselem, what does that mean? What does that mean? So first of all, the simplest understanding of the Mishnah, I didn't even put it on the sheet, but many Mefarshim make this point, is that the very fact that Hashem made us B'Tselem Elohim in His image is a siman, is a sign of His love for us. Right? In other words, you wouldn't want to be associated with someone you didn't love. Whereas by Hashem making us in His image, kaviyachla as a word, this person has a shtick Eibishter in him. This person has a little bit of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in him. He's a child of Hashem. All of a sudden, that means that every time you do something or Hashem, anyone sees you, you reflect on Hashem, just like your children. You look exactly like your mom. And you were really sweet in the grocery. What a nice thing. Your parents must have raised you well. Right, but you wouldn't want, if you were worried about, you wouldn't put a sign, I am so-and-so's child on your child if you're worried that they were going to be embarrassing every minute. So the very fact, that's the first line of the Mishnah, Chaviv Adam Shenivar B'Tselem, the very fact that Hashem made us in His image is a sign that He loves us. Okay, that's number one. But I think what's very important is what the Rashi says in source number three. What's the first word out of Rashi? L'chein! Mutal alav la'asos rotzon kono. But if Hashem has invested in you, if Hashem has said, I am willing to be known through you, I am willing to let people see you and say, you're a reflection of God, you're in the image of God, that is a very inspiring and empowering thing. Hashem believes in me. But it also puts a tremendous responsibility on us, because we know that we are a reflection of other people. Again, I can say, I grew up in a relatively small community, at least a small Orthodox community. It was a mid-sized American city, a million people plus, but it was a small religious community. And in that Orthodox, even the Jewish community, my parents were very, very well known for a variety of reasons. It was like a massive feeling. If I look back on my childhood, I was Ronnie and Sarah Gottlieb's son. It meant a lot. But it was also a huge responsibility. Because if I would be misbehaving or whatever, that would reflect badly on my parents. And every one of us have felt that way. I'm just speaking autobiographically. I'm not saying my experience was anything special. I'm just saying, but everyone's had a situation in which that's the case. And there's something beautiful about that. So it's not just that it's a covet to have wonderful parents and to come from a wonderful family, but that gives a certain responsibility because you are a reflection of your parents and your grandparents, etc. And that's exactly what Rashi says here. Now, this now brings us to an issue which is probably PhDs have been written about it, books have been written about it, so we're just going to dip our pinky toe into it, which is, we can't really do this mission without asking the question, what does it mean to be B'Tselem Elohim? What does it mean to be the image of God? Right? We've heard this phrase, even non-Jews talk about this all the time. What does it mean? So, massive, massive topic. Admittedly, we cannot possibly do it justice. However, there are two, I would say, my superficial survey or cursory survey of the sources, I think there are two very well-known approaches. I think there are more than two, but there are two very well-known approaches which actually find their expression in Mefarshim, in commentaries on Pirkei Avos. They have other sources, even more well-known sources, but we're trying to stick to the commentaries of Pirkei Avos. And sort and approach number one to what does it mean? Anyone have any idea? What do you guys think? Or what have you heard in the past? What have you learned? What does it mean that you're, we're all created in the image of Hashem. What does that mean? Tapas. It doesn't mean you have Hashem's nose. Right? What does it mean? Anyone know? It's a funny thing because it seems like a really important thing we should know. And it's something that we all have heard, but what does it actually mean? I'll put in parentheses, what does it actually mean that no one ever bothered teaching you what it mean? What does it mean? Okay, but again, I'm back off the soapbox, back into the shir. Okay, so I think there's more than one approach, but there are two big approaches. The first approach is source number four, the Magen Avos, which we've, in the past few weeks, we've used this source every week. It's one of the commentaries, one of the later Spanish Rishonim on Pirkei Avos. But this opinion is even more well-known because there are others, including the Rambam and Moreh Nevuchim, who has this view. And what is the first approach? If you see where it's underlined, Lefish yesh bo da'as lahakir es boro yoser mehem. V'nikra mipnezet selam elokim ki hu hanivchar v'habashubach shechol hatzalamim. Says the Rambam, says the Magen Avos. What it means that Chaviv Adam is compared to the rest of the animal kingdom. God created everything in the world, plants, animals, all that stuff. And what makes human beings, not Jews, human beings unique is our mental and intellectual ability. Tzelem Elokim is an intellectual statement. The fact that human beings have a sophisticated mind and can deduce and can abstract think and can conceptualize all that stuff that no other form of life has, that is the Tzelem Elokim, that Hashem is the most brilliant, and we're a watered-down version of it, but there's at least a sense, where there's a shadow of Hashem's intelligence in the sophisticated higher intelligence that human beings can have. You see where he says it towards the end, where it's underlined again, V'chein ha-nikra ha-adam tselem elokim, lafishu ha-nichbad, shebachol ha-nivraim, ha-tachtonim, bidmus u-bibnia, right? U-bibina, excuse me. Right, so again, the insight, the intellectual ability of human beings, that is, according to the Magen Avos, what Tzelem Elokim is. I mentioned to you the Moreh Nevuchim, the Rambam, and he on the bottom says also Rav Tzadja Gaon. You have two of the greatest Jewish philosophers in all of history who apparently also say the same thing, and we see this now echoed in this commentary on Pirkei Avos. So one approach to what it means to be uniquely human. Human beings are uniquely B'Tzelem Elokim, because human beings have the unique ability to be intellectual. Okay? Number five, the Tiferes Yisrael, who is a much more recent commentary on Pirkei Avos, and we're going to use him a lot. He did a lot of good work on this particular Mishnah, on every Mishnah, but this Mishnah, I used him a lot. So he quotes an opinion, which is also very, very well known, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe that Rav Chaim Volozhiner in the Nefesh HaChaim takes this approach, as do others, and he has something slightly different. Source number five, what is that? That we are a Baal Bechira. V'zehu Tzel Melukim. Shekoach biyado yisparach la'asos kefi ritzono. Just like God can do whatever he wants, so too Hashem made human beings with a faculty called Bechira Chofshis. Right? And the elephant doesn't like consciously think each time, do I want to do this? I think I'm going to go to the watering hole again today. That's not what an elephant does, and it's certainly not what a river or a mountain does. Only human beings have that sense of free choice. And that is something that is not unique to Jewish people, that is unique to human beings. Now, I'm just going to throw out there, for those of you who are familiar, maybe I shouldn't, for those who aren't familiar, I shouldn't even mention it, but I will, just so you, in case you are familiar. Over many periods of Jewish history, or world history, Bechir Chafshis has come under attack. It's actually a fascinating thing that there is a strand of human thought over centuries that is desperate not to believe in Bechir Chafshis. I assume the reason, consciously or subconsciously, is because when you have Bechir Chafshis, so you're also responsible for your decisions. And a lot of people would much rather be totally free from any responsibility, even if it meant that their life was basically meaningless. Because what would life be if you didn't have free choice? If you really were, right? If we could go into the matrix and actually see that we were all just robots, right? We'd be pretty depressing, I would think. Like, who would want that? And yet, apparently, a lot of people do want that because it frees them of responsibility. So, that notwithstanding, in different periods of intellectual history, whatever the fad of the century or of the generation were, it has people have used that to attack with our cultures. When people believed in astronomy, astrology, and mazalos, that was a thing. And anyway, right now, like literally 21st century, it's a major thing in the world of, you know, higher biology and physics, because basically there's a whole, you know, new atheism that basically says we're all just, you know, these neurons and different things firing in our brain, and from the moment you were born in your DNA and stuff, everything has already been predetermined. And again, it's very, very sophisticated stuff, like above my science level education, I can tell you that. The good news for us is that there are great Rabbanim and scholars and Talmid Chachamim who also have very high educations, and it's been a major intellectual discussion back and forth for at least 25, 30 years already, is this particular new attack based on modern biology and understandings of brain chemistry and things like that. So if you never heard about it and you forget about it the second I finish talking about it, you're fine. But in case you ever come across it, you should just know, yes, this is a thing. But even though I can't say I personally would have an answer if I was talking to one of these biology atheists, I don't think I personally could answer him off the top of my head. But we take it as a very central principle of faith, an article of faith, that we have Bechir Chavshus. And this is a broader point in general. The Rambam speaks about this in the Tshuva. And specifically, the Magen of the Tiferes Yisrael and others point to it as the explanation of Tzel Melekim. I'm going to stop for 1 second because even though you guys said you were very happy half an hour ago with the here, I am dying of heat. Maybe because I'm speaking. Also, there's a thing no one really knows. I'm just going to sit over your shoulders for a second. There's a thing they say when these students don't like to pull.
Over there,
right? It's a true thing? Okay, it's true.
The air.
Okay, so that was the mistake. You should have put it on probably a while ago. Anyway, okay. Okay, hopefully on every level we'll do better. Sorry. Just for the record, I was going to put it on right away, but I defer to the women of the shear. People didn't want the air initially. Okay, continuing. So we now know that human beings are beloved. And we're beloved because we're made in the B'Tzel Malukim. What does it mean to be the B'Tzel Malukim? It might mean intellectual abilities, it might be the fact that we have free choice, which does come with responsibility, but also comes with rewards. Two possibilities. Okay? Now, here's something that I mentioned at the outset of this year, which we're about to get to. This is kind of a linguistic thing in the Mishnah, but I think it's actually going to be a profound insight. That's not only interesting about the Mishnah, I think it's actually a good life piece of advice and interesting as well, which is, if you recall, going back to the top of the page, the actual Mishnah, in all three stages of the Mishnah, Rabbi Kiva said, there's this thing which shows that human beings are beloved, or the Jewish people are even more beloved. And then there's the cherry on top, Chiba Yisera Sheno Da'as Lehem, that people were told this, right? Chav Adon Shevet Selem, but it's not just that you should know you're created in the image of God. Chiba Yisera, an extra dose of love Hashem has expressed, in the sense that it's written somewhere, as it says in Bereishis. And that we saw that in all three places. In all three stages of the Mishnah, there's a thing. Human beings are special because of X. Jewish people are special because of Y. And each time the Mishnah says, and it's not just the fact of it, but there's a cherry on top, which is it was no da'as lehem. So what exactly does that mean? So this is actually a two or even three-way machloket. But again, I know sometimes I have a tendency, because this is my personality, and after the shir, my wife will say, you didn't have to get that much into the weeds about every little detail. Maybe she's right. Not everyone is interested in details as much as I am. But this, I think, is really worth it, because each one of these things is really, really telling about a broader, I would say, human advice. And it will help us with broader human interaction, I think. And that is as follows. Take a look at the Rambam. We'll skip the Rambam for a second. If you go, there's basically two basic approaches to the Mishnah, and we'll skip number 8 just because it's late. We'll skip source number 8 for a second, which is a whole different approach to it, although it's a good one. But let's leave that aside for a second. The Rambam in source number 6, Tiferes Yisrael in source number 7, they both basically agree with the following. That what is the extra love, the cherry on top? Not just that we as human beings were created in the image of God, not just the Jewish people are special because we're banim lamakom, but there was something extra about the fact that no da'as lo, which they understand to mean literally, that God told us. He told us that we're special, that we're in the Tzel Melekim. He told us that we're special because you're banim lamakom. Now, even though they both agree, source number 6 and number 7, they agree about that, I think if you read it carefully, they're making two different points. Take a look at source number 7 for a moment. Says it's Tiferes Yisrael. Hashem didn't just create us in his image. He told Noach, that's the pasuk that the Mishnah quoted in Bereishis Perek Tet. He told Noach, you know, that we are Nivra B'Tzelem Elokim. B'Tzelem Elokim Asa Adam. So says the Tiferes Yisrael source number 7. The Gilalo, he revealed to Noach and all mankind at that moment the preciousness of man. The fact that Hashem told us, Zemeid Al Godel Hachiba, Ad Shemodio Shemachavo Kolchach. Says the Tiferes Yisrael, the very fact that Hashem told Noach was a sign, it testified to how great the love is. What is he trying to say? I think something very profound, which we'll all recognize from human experience. Sometimes you have an affection, sometimes even a love for a person. But if it's only at level X, you keep it to yourself. Either because it's not worth sharing, or you're too scared to share. But there can come a time where a person is filled with so much love that they can't keep it to themselves. Right? You ever see a mother with a child? Right? All the coochie-coos. Love you, love you, love you. Why? Because the love is so great, you can't even keep it inside. So the act of telling isn't doing anything, but it's reflecting. It's, or to use the Tiferes Yisrael's words, it's meyid. It's a sign, or it's a testimonial to how much the love is. Couldn't keep it to himself, couldn't keep it to herself, shared it. Says the Tiferes Yisrael, that's the idea. When Hashem could have just made us in his image, which we already said, the fact that he made us in his image is a proof that he loves us, but it would have been true whether we knew it or not. The fact that Hashem couldn't keep it to himself and he wants to tell you, I love you. I made you in my image. I want people to see you and see me. I want to be connected to you. Hashem couldn't keep that to himself. The fact that he told us is a siman of how much he loves us. Again, I think that's a very beautiful insight. And, you know, as I say, I think it's very much a resonant with our human experience. Okay? But I think, maybe I'm wrong, you could disagree with me, I think that the Rambam is saying something different in source number 6, which in many ways is even more profound and more relevant to our lives. Look at source number 6. Again, in many ways it's the same as the Tiferes Yisrael, but I think it's different in one key way. Says the Rambam, source number 6. Ki ha-hoda'a lemi shehitivo lo b'shir ha-tova. Again, he's agreeing that the interpretation of the Mishnah means that this extra cherry on top was like God told us. He told Noah, he told mankind. But what? In what way is that extra love? In what way is that a cherry on top? So said the Rambam, the very fact that Hashem revealed, he made known to the person that he is giving this gift to, that he created us in the image, he hatava acheret. That is a different, new, additional favor or act of love. Ki pamim metivim im adam derech rachamanuna love, etc. Let's deconstruct. What is the Rambam saying? I think this is so, so profound. A lot of times, we will behave in a positive, warm, kind, maybe even an affectionate way towards another person, but that doesn't necessarily reflect that we truly love the person. Right? We're going out of our way to do kindness to them. It could be because of Rachmanus. Rachmanus is an important midah, but you don't necessarily love everyone you have Rachmanus on. All sorts of examples. It could even be cold and calculating and political. It's your boss's son, and you have no choice but to whatever, right? There are all sorts of reasons why in life, just to keep the peace with the step-sibling or whatever, there could be all sorts of reasons why you behave in a positive way towards a person. And if you're the recipient of some kindness, at some point you might think, you know, how do I know that they're doing this because they love me or that? The very fact that they did it could mean a lot of things. So says the Rambam, when you tell somebody, I'm doing this because I love you, you tell the person I love you, it's not just that when you love someone so much, there's like a shiur, like, you know, how many degrees of love is there? Well, when you're only up to 80, you keep it to yourself, but when you hit over 85, it just bubbles out, you love. Like, that's what we said from the Tiferes Yisrael, right? The mother loves her child so much, she can't help but keep it. I love you, I love you, I love you. I think the Rambam is saying something different. It's not that when you tell somebody you love them, that's the siman that you love them, or the siman of how much you love them. I think it's true. But I'm saying something else. It's that the very act of telling is its own kindness. It's not revealing how much kindness there was, how much love there was. It's an act of love in and of itself. Because in many ways, the greatest thing we can do for people is not all the things we do for them, but letting them know that we love them and that that's why we're doing all the other things. All the other things are fine, and they may be correctly or incorrectly, we don't know, interpreted as a sign of love. But even though it's the most intangible thing, like what did it get me? Like the very fact that you, I don't know, drove to the airport, or you were up with me till 3 in the morning in the emergency room, or a lot of ways you could be showing kindness and maybe even love to a person. So what is the 3 words I love you? What did that add? That wasn't in something much more meaningful. And the answer is, in some ways you're right. It's not a substitute for doing all those things that we do for people that we love. But not to lose sight of the fact, says the Rambam, that the very fact of telling someone you love them is, as he put it, hatava acheret. That in and of itself is a kindness. I don't think that's what this, I think this is so profound. And it, I hope, reminds us of how important it is. And it's something we, many of us, I wouldn't say all, many people take for granted. Which is, the longer you're in a relationship with somebody and the closer you are with somebody, the more it just becomes second nature, and the more we just assume that they know how much we love them. The more we assume they know how much we care about them. I will be stereotypical for a moment and say this is usually more of a problem for men. But not always. Not always. And this Rambam, I think, is so important. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't just do something amazing for us because He loves us and created us in His image, which would be the analogy to all the million things we do for our children or for our spouses because we love them. Yes, it's true. And just thinking about all the things that my spouse does for me, or my children have done for me, or I've done for my children, should be enough to convey. Says Rambam, maybe, maybe not. But even if yes, it doesn't change the fact that there's a hatava acheret. There's a whole other level we can reach by just telling them we love them. Which then creates the bridge between the emotion and all the things that we do for them. Again, just saying you love them and never being around, you know, being an absentee father or a husband who's never around or a wife who's never around because I'm so busy, but I love you, that's obviously not enough. And all, but the Rambam is saying all the doing without I love you is also not everything you can do. The very act of communicating is a hatava acheret. Again, I have to say, I didn't know this Rambam until yesterday. But I'll never be the same. This is such an important Rambam. Again, I think the Tiferes Tzvi is also important. But I think the Rambam, it takes it to a whole another level. Okay, let's move on. Source number 9, the Tiferes Yisrael. Yet again, this is a very, very famous Tiferes Yisrael. I've actually taught it in other contexts. And he makes the point, we won't belabor it, but he makes the point that I mentioned just almost as a given when we read the Mishnah together 45 minutes ago, which is that by the Mishnah saying, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem, and then in the next clause of the Mishnah, Chaviv in Yisrael, it's clear that the first stage was not referring to only Jews. But the non-Jews are also beloved. And the non-Jews are created in the image of Hashem. Whatever, and this is itself a debate, whatever there may or may not be differences in the neshama of a Jew versus a non-Jew, and not everyone agrees to that, even though that's very common to assume nowadays. But in the Rishonim, that was a big debate. But even if it's true, says the Tiferes Yisrael, it's clear that this mission is telling us, Ha'adam Garcina Dahainu Afilu Akum. We're talking about even a non-Jew. Even a non-Jew is Chaviv to Hashem. And even a non-Jew is created in the image of Hashem. And not only is it because you have the inference in the Adam versus Chaviv in Yisrael, also the very fact that the Pasuk that's quoted is a Pasuk that was said to Noah, who of course is the father of all mankind. So there is a special relationship with the Jewish people, but we should not in any way, and unfortunately you and I both know, that very often, you know, people consciously or unconsciously, explicitly or implicitly, are so focused on the special relationship with the Jewish people, that we just kind of make assumptions, and sometimes worse than that, we even voice our ignorant assumptions about the way Hashem, or the way we think non-Jews are, and certain types of non-Jews, and it has zero basis in authentic Torah. It's just prejudice and racism, unfortunately, which does no good for the Jewish people and no good for Torah. And this, The Tiferes Yisrael, for those of you who are familiar with his commentary on the Mishnah, he has these smaller comments, which is what we typically quote in our shir, but he actually has a whole section beneath it, which are long essays. And on this particular comment that I just shared with you, he has a much longer essay where he talks about it's obvious that Hashem loves non-Jews too, and that non-Jews can go to Olam Haba. And then he starts listing by name multiple scientists from the 19th century in his lifetime who created various vaccines and medicines. You see the contributions that they've made to mankind. How could you think that Hashem wouldn't appreciate what they've done? Very, very profound, profound essay. Okay, now let's use the last 10 minutes or so that we have together to focus on what makes the Jewish people special. Now that we've seen how much Hashem loves you, everybody, what about the Jewish people? So the Magen Avos in source number 10 points out that the very fact that we are banim lemakom, why does the Mishnah use that phrase? Al zeh nikru banim, kmo sha'av mekarevet banav elav yoter me'avadav. He makes 2 points. The first point is, you can say, I'm a universalist and I love everybody, but you completely, again, I'm not saying that someone who's really offended would resolve it for them, but at least internally, sometimes there are Jews who feel uncomfortable with this whole idea of the Am HaNifchar thing. So it says the Magen Avos, you shouldn't feel uncomfortable with it or be insecure. It's actually natural, right? You can love everyone, you can respect everyone, you can be polite to everyone, you can care about everybody, but your children are special. No one thinks you're a bad person because you would do for your children what you wouldn't do for your neighbor's children. That's just normal. No one thinks you're a bad person because you love your children more than your nephews or nieces, let alone your neighbor's children. That's just natural. So says the Magen Avos, it doesn't mean that Hashem doesn't love other people, that they're bad or they're less than. But we're Hashem's children, and therefore it's only natural. I remember years ago, I heard Rabbi Avi Weiss made this point. I thought he gave a very powerful analogy. I don't know if he quoted the source, but he was making that point also. He's a very strong pro-Jewish advocate in Israel and Zionism and the Jewish people. He's not a universalist at all. He's a very he loved the Jewish people very, very much, Rabbi Weiss. So he was making the point that you shouldn't feel bad about that. He said sometimes, I can't remember, maybe the reason when I heard him speak, maybe it was like after a particular Rahman al-Tan plane crash or something. I can't remember. I remember him mentioning, when you hear about an attack, even let's say if you're living in America or England or wherever, right, you hear about a plane crash, right? Certain people's first instinct is, you're looking for the names, right? You don't assume you know anyone, Baruch Hashem, but, are there Goldbergs, are there, and if you see a Jewish name, all of a sudden, your heart breaks a little bit more. So he was saying, should we feel bad about that? Well, what about the 100 other people? What about the 100 other children? So he says, not at all. Why should you feel bad about that? If you knew your brother or your sister was on a plane that day, and then you heard on the news that a plane crashed, would anyone begrudge you being more nervous to quickly look at the name list to see, oh my gosh? No, because of course everyone assumes that you're going to be more nervous and more worried about your brother or your sister. So if every Jew is your brother and your sister, why should you care more if one of them, Rahman al-Islam, died than somebody else? Doesn't mean you don't care about other people. So this is exactly what the Magen Avos is saying here. If you really take it seriously, that we're banim lemakom, which means that all of our fellow Jews are our brothers and our sisters, so then lots of things naturally follow. It doesn't preclude other things, but there's certain natural. That's number one, why banim is such an important phrase. Number two, he says, and this is also equally profound, middle of source number 10, afilu b'shas hakas kriyim banim. Very, very profound. Right? All of humanity has a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But if they're really, really wicked, Hashem may say, I'm not interested in you anymore. I hired you. I was looking for good help. Turns out I got the wrong hire. But banim lemakom, when you're talking about someone's child, so then even if they misbehave, and you can pull out your hair, and you could, some people dafka lose a ton of weight when they're having anxiety with their children. Some people dafka gain a lot of weight when they're having attention. Right? There's two opposite ways people have relationships with food. Everyone has a relationship with food when they're tense. Just the opposite ways. Some people are lucky, some people like me are less. And they do the opposite with food. Anyway, so children, there's no more anxiety-inducing thing in the whole world than children, of course. And sometimes it is their fault. And sometimes you look at them, they're like, if it wasn't my child, but it is. But it is. And certainly a mother, but even a father. A child's a child's a child. It doesn't matter what they do, they'll never lose that relationship with you. Because of you, because you love them. So says the Magen Avos, the same thing. That's why we're banim lemakom. Of course Hashem wants us to do the right thing. He wants, what we all want. Yirush hanachas from the children. But not every time does the child get the award at graduation. Not every time do you have a great, you know, get the Gemara Award or the this award. Sometimes you're just happy the kid made it to graduation. Sometimes they don't, even. But still your child. And you still lie down in front of a trainer for them. So it says the Magen Avos, the same thing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why we're banim l'makom. Afilu b'shas akas, kriyim banim. Even if we're, he's furious at us. He's furious at us as children. And that's years ago, it was on an Erev Rosh Hashanah, I think it was, I heard of Usher Weiss speak in Beit Shemesh, and I can't remember the whole Devar Torah, and we wouldn't have time to share it anyway, but he was basically, had his own mushal, maybe he was quoting someone, I don't remember, but the mushal had to do with, if I remember correctly, I think it was a soldier maybe, who had gone AWOL or something. It was like a mushal of, like, you know, someone who has a certain tafkid and isn't doing it, which is a mushal obviously for Jewish people, if you're sinning and you're not doing what you're supposed to do, and like the fear and the trepidation, you know, of having to go before the court, before the, you know. But imagine the difference if you showed up with all the fear and all the stakes, and you looked up and Abba was the judge. That's a complete, you know, you could still get in trouble, but it's a completely different experience. So that's banim l'makom. Even when he's upset at us, and even if he has to punish us, but it's like, it's as a parent, and we're as Hashem's children, and that love is permanent. There's always that love. And this is, Tiferes Yisrael makes a very simpler point, very powerful, in source number 11 as well. Okay, last but not least is the issue of how the Torah is the quote-unquote Kli Chemda. Hashem didn't just make us Banim L'Makom, but He gave us His choicest gift. He gave us the Kli Chemda. So the mission itself says that, so to speak, Hashem created the world with the Torah. What exactly that means, if we take that literally, is clearly it has to be some kind of mystical idea. And there are many mystical sources in the tradition, not only in the commentaries of Pirkei Avos, that speak about somehow Hashem using the Torah, Estakla Ba'araisa Ubara Alma. There are Hasidic sources and other Kabbalistic sources that talk about Hashem using the letters of the Aleph Bet to form the world. It's way beyond my pay grade. But such things exist, and you do have a remez to that in the Mishnah here in Pirkei Avos itself. But there's a few other interpretations which I think are very worthwhile to consider. In source number 13, the Tiferes Yisrael has other ideas. He says the very fact, you know, what makes the Torah so special? Not dafka, there's some mystical idea that Hashem created the world with it, but rather it's a kli umnus lahasig al yada hatlachas ha'artziv ha'shamayimi. The Torah is such a special thing, it's called the most beloved thing to Hashem, as I called it before, it's a cheat code. So first of all, it's a cheat code, it's a cheat sheet in the sense that it's giving you the answers for what he called hatzlacha ha'shamayimi, for spiritual success. And you still have to put in the work. But you don't have to guess now what Hashem wants, right? When you're early in the relationship, you have to guess what your spouse wants. You have to guess whatever wants, right? If you have a good relationship, you know what they like and don't like. So now you still have to do this. You still have to go out and do, you know, plan the anniversary dinner. You still have to go out and buy the birthday gift. But at least you know you have a chance to be successful. So Hashem giving us the Torah gives us a chance to be successful spiritually. But he adds something which is, I think, a chiddush, but I think it's easily understandable. But he adds, he says, not just haslacha hashamayimi, also haslacha artzi. I don't think he means that if you keep the Torah, you're guaranteed to be rich. I mean, I assume he doesn't mean that because that's stupid. But what I think he does mean, and we don't have time to develop this at the moment, but just I'm throwing it out there because I think this is what he means, is I think what he's trying to make the claim for, and I think this is very persuasive, is that if you follow the Torah, not just like, you know, not eating milk and meat together, but like the broader Torah, which includes Pirkei Avos in particular, right, it's a better life. Forget what's going to happen after 120. In this world, it's a better life. So I think that's what he's trying to say. Hashem gave us this incredible gift, right? There's you get return on your investment every year, meaning in this life, it's already in the short term. There's also the compound interest, hopefully in a very long time, after 120. But it's not just you have to wait till Hatzlacha Shamayimi. Hatzlacha Arati too. It's also just a better, happier life. That's one interpretation he gives. And then in the middle of source number 13, he makes something very, very profound also, again, which actually fits into the broader theme of Jew and non-Jew in the whole Mishnah. Because says in the Tiferes Yisrael, source number 13, why is it called Kli Chemda? Shekol Devareha Imrei Noam Matok Lenefesh Umarpe Le'etzem. Oh, he says the Torah is so yummy. The Torah is so delicious. The Torah is so sweet. The Torah is so brilliant and so persuasive. Ad Shekola umos notrim v'yishme elim v'av she'enu motzien et atzmam. I think that's what it means. Muchiyavim l'shmor sa mitzvah so yeah. Afilo hachi chemduha v'chabduha v'yakdushua v'yakiru elukuta. He says, again, he's clearly talking about Torah Shevachsav now, the Bible. He says, but the Torah is kli chemda, this special gift. How do I know? Because even the non-Jews respect Torah. Even the non-Jews, even the Christians, even the Muslims, again, we part with them shortly thereafter, sometimes very severe ways, but the very fact that it's not just the X million of Jews, it's the billions of even non-Jews who understand the brilliance, you know, of the world's best-selling book, of the Torah itself. And that itself is an indication of the brilliance of the Torah. He adds, and this is clearly not the world we live in currently, at least if you live in the Western world, Umisha makish devareha, you're in big trouble. Or again, this was true for most of human history until the modern era, and it's still true in the Arab world or the Muslim world at the moment, just not true in the Western world, which is that if you don't respect religion, you're not respected. Right? Again, in the Western world, we live in a very inverted world, unfortunately. But and I'm not necessarily jealous of people getting thrown off roofs in Arab countries because they do the wrong thing. I'm just saying that there was a time in history, which is not even that long ago, where you could say about the whole world, including the Western world, that the most respectable thing was to be someone who respects the Torah. You know, I don't mean the Gemara, but I mean the Chumash. And that's itself another indication of that. Okay, we're going to conclude. I'm just going to mention very, very quickly the last source number 16, which is that Rabbeinu Yonah mentions at the end of the Mishnah that there's something, a very important balance to keep in mind. And that is as follows. On the one hand, if you think about it, everyone, and especially Jewish people, when you read this Mishnah, she'd be filled with a tremendous sense of being loved. Right? I'm loved that I'm a human being. And more than that, I'm loved that I'm a child of Hashem. And I'm not just Hashem's child, but Hashem gave me His most special gift. He gave me the Torah. Those are three things in the Mishnah. There's three levels of love. And we should feel very, very close to Hashem from that perspective. On the other hand, he says, we also all realize that we're really very far from Hashem. Far because intellectually, how can we really understand Hashem? Far because none of us are perfect. So basically what he says, Rabbeinu Yonah, is the default, and this is interesting psychological insight, which is true, I don't think for everybody, but for a lot of people, that people more instinctively feel distant from Hashem. The purpose of this Mishnah was to be the balancing act, and to show, as he pointed, in three different ways, how close we are as Adam, as human beings, as Yisrael, as Jewish people, and then number three, even the fact that Hashem gave us the Torah. So we should realize how karov eleinu Hashem, how close we are to Hashem. On the other hand, we also feel very far, and we know our own inadequacies. And therefore, he concludes the upshot of everything. This is the last two lines. Ein lo liyos einav lo rasha b'fnei atzmo, v'lo tzadik b'fnei atzmo. The message to take out of this is, you're not as good as you think, but you're not as bad as you think. You have to have a balanced approach. Zos tzieh toras ha'adam, lo litracheik, v'lo litkarev. You have to realize that yes, we have the potential to be incredibly close to Hashem. He's given us so many opportunities because He loves us. At the same time, there are certain just innate things because we're a human being, and then there's the unique things that we ourselves maybe are not perfect at, which create a certain level of distance. But it's all up to us. Hakol lefi rov hamasa. Ki el hadveikos hagodol. On the one hand, we have an innate closeness. We're HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children. On the other hand, there's great responsibilities that come with that. We don't always feel that we're His children, and we don't always live up to being His children. So there needs to be a balancing act. And this is like a classic idea you find in many ways. Should we be very humble or have a big ego? The answer is neither. You have to have a balance between them. So should we feel super close to Hashem that we can do no wrong because we're like, you know, the boss's son and therefore we can get away with anything? No, that would be terrible. But should we feel like we're this, you know, person Hashem doesn't even know who we are? No, Mapitom, Hashem loves us and knows who we are. Or should we feel the opposite, that we are, what's it called? Somebody who sins terribly and therefore we have no chance? No. What are you talking about? You do lots of good things. So finding that balance, I think, is an interesting subplot to the Mishnah. But the broader point, of course, is, again, this issue of the relationship between the Jewish people and non-Jews. And both of us having our special relationship with Hashem, but something obviously being really unique when it comes to the Jewish people. Okay? Sure, everyone. Thank you for coming. In the dog days of summer, fighting off the heat and the mosquitoes.